And we're delighted at this time to bring along one of the nation's top broadcasters, one of the most honored, one of the most revered broadcasters in America, Tom Joyner. And Tom, it's always a pleasure to have you on the airwaves of WTSB. And let me tell you that you are a gift of the good Lord to the good listeners of WTSB. We have many, many fine broadcasters here, but you're one of the very best there has been. You started as one of the pioneers in talk radio, and you've just gotten better and better and as the years have waned on. And you were even broadcast in talk radio before the days of Rush Limbaugh. So when I say the great Tom Joyner, I mean every single word of it. You are certainly a gift allowed by the good Lord to come to the great people of North Carolina, and I recognize that as a friend and as a supporter. So come on in, say hello to everybody, and we're just thrilled to have you on the air, and just come on in, kind of educate us a little bit, if you will.
Carl, I was really going to speak to exactly what you said. I appreciate those words. The answer to terrorism that we face today should not drive us as individuals to hide under the bed or fear going about our lives as usual. The odds of being involved with a terrorist are, at this time, still very remote. So what we must do as a country is eliminate the root of the problem. Now, there's much to speak of today, but first, I'd like to clarify why I feel qualified to air these commentaries. I'm sure most of the people I grew up with in Wilson County wonder what happened to that guy who wanted nothing in high school but to play sports. The answer is that from the time I enlisted in the Navy at age 18, I grew up. I have dedicated myself to absorbing all that has swirled about our world and country. Countless hours, every week. For more than 57 years, 51 of those years as a broadcaster on radio and television. While I was doing talk radio by 1967, Rush Limbaugh was still a young boy. In 2001, I was honored to be inducted into the North Carolina Broadcasting Hall of Fame. All this to say that my commentaries are not off the cuff. They are well researched, and that my time at this later stage in my life is dedicated to informing my fellow Americans about the dangers before us. I ask for no compensation of any kind. I receive no compensation. All monies from my book or from speaking fees go immediately to our wounded warriors. My reward is the knowledge that I can impart to people, many of whom are busy and don't take the time to understand the problems. Knowledge is power. We now know even more about the two Muslim terrorists who killed or wounded more than 35 innocent people in San Bernardino, California, a few days ago. Funerals are underway for them now. FBI Director James Comey tells us that the two were radicalized as early as 2012 before they met one another. They met online, and they spoke freely of their plans for jihad. Syed Farouk, age 28, and Tashin Malik, age 27, met when Syed traveled to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. They spent 9 days in Mecca, and she later joined him in California on a fiancé visa. She had a Pakistani passport, which listed her address in Pakistan at a location that did not exist. American security officials supposedly vetted this woman, who was bent upon bringing death and destruction to our country, but whatever they do to vet someone obviously failed. Consider that here we had a Pakistani woman with a passport listing a phony address, and who had been openly discussing her plans for jihad against us on the internet. And the security that we depend upon did not even identify her. At the same time, Barack Obama wants to import tens of thousands of refugees from Syria who have no past history. Nothing available to us and no way to verify who they are. Obama says they will be vetted by Homeland Security, but we now have proof that that security has failed us. Evidence is now pointing toward the idea that ISIS or others may have put these two together in an arranged marriage. That would be a game changer. 531 Pakistanis have come to the United States this year on these fiancé visas. If the terrorists had discovered this loophole in our security, it would be all too easy to take a committed Islamic terrorist in countries such as Pakistan and link them up with a jihadist here in the United States to attack us. It is the height of insanity to follow behind Obama, a man who told us that ISIS had been contained just before the Paris attack. Our FBI chief and Secretary of Defense Ash Carter testified last Wednesday that ISIS has not been contained. Obama knew that when he misled the American people yet again. Our country is clearly under attack from ISIS and other Islamic militant groups. They tell us they are at war with us. Yet Obama's administration insists that we are not at war with them. As long as Obama holds to that attitude, none of us are safe. Let me ask you something, especially you liberal Democrats. Does anyone believe for a minute that if it were Christians being slaughtering Muslims all across the world, Christians slaughtering Muslims all across the world, that Obama would not do whatever was necessary to defend those Muslims? If you doubt that, you're a fool, or you choose to ignore reality, or both. More on this in a moment. But at this point, I want to speak out against the war on Donald Trump. While I do not endorse Trump at this point in time, I do reject those Republicans and Democrats who have, along with a gleeful mainstream media, ganged up on Trump for the comment he made about banning Muslims from entry into the United States. What Trump said in context was true, but he should have said all entry by all immigrants and refugees had to be stopped for a period of 18 to 24 months while we perfect the means of vetting each person allowed into this country, and while we find and deport the hundreds of thousands who came here on a visa that has long since expired, and who hide rather than go back to the country who issued them a passport. They never had any intention of going back home. Obviously, not all of these refugees are jihadists, but we know that some are. Why does it matter? Because we can't seem to get a handle on which ones mean us harm, and those who don't. If you were confronted with 100 dogs, of which only two had rabies, would you let them enter your house, any of them? And which ones would you feed, water, and invite to stay in your home? I doubt you'd take any of them. I find it interesting that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have dedicated Muslims as their chief advisors. In Obama's case, it's Valerie Jarrett, whose family has deep ties to communism in Chicago. Her father, James Bowman, had extensive ties to communist associations and individuals as far back as 1950. Jarrett's father was in communication with a paid Soviet agent named Alfred Stern, who fled to Prague after getting charged with espionage. Both Jarrett's maternal grandfather and father-in-law were hardcore communists under investigation by the U.S. government. The Jarrett family's communist ties also include a business partnership between Jarrett's maternal grandfather and the Soviet agent associated with her father. It has been well documented that Valerie Jarrett, a Chicago lawyer, is a liberal extremist who wields tremendous power in the White House over Obama, and who has connections to many communist and extremist groups, including the Muslim Brotherhood. A dedicated Muslim herself, Jarrett has been instrumental in advising Obama to bring a great many members of the Muslim Brotherhood into government offices, some in extremely sensitive posts, such as Homeland Security. This woman, who is Obama's chief reliance, and her family have deep ties to Frank Marshall Davis, one of Obama's chief mentors and a Communist Party member with an extensive FBI file. Valerie Jarrett had a role in covering up a scandalous gun-running scheme carried out by the Justice Department under Eric Holder and under the nose of Hillary Clinton. Jarrett was a key player in the effort to cover up that Attorney General Eric Holder lied to Congress about Fast and Furious, a disastrous experiment in which ATF members allowed guns to be smuggled into Mexico. This crackpot idea was to eventually trace those guns to drug cartels. Instead, we lost track of hundreds of those guns, which have now been used in many crimes, including the murder of a U.S. Border Patrol agent. In 2008, Valerie Jarrett was linked to a series of real estate scandals, including several housing projects operated by convicted felon and Obama fundraiser Tony Rezko. There are also questions about Jarrett's role in the Benghazi attack, which killed four Americans, including our ambassador to Libya. Obama, who is known to have had serious bouts with drugs, was AWOL on the evening of the Benghazi attack, and to this day has offered no defense for his lack of involvement. The city of Chicago is a cesspool of fraud, bribes, and crime. And Valerie Jarrett, as well as Barack Obama and the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, are up to their eyebrows in the stench. Blacks in Chicago have finally opened their eyes to see that their city is a death trap and that Rahm Emanuel and liberal Democrats before him ruled for decades by promising a better life for blacks, a better life that has more misery in it than ever before. So they're now marching and protesting. They want Emanuel removed from the mayor's office. But Emanuel, Obama, and the thuggish Democrat liberals in Chicago have no intention of giving up their power. Hillary Clinton's chief aide and confidant is Huma Mahmoud Abedin, a 39-year-old dedicated Muslim who is married to the disgraced former New York Congressman Anthony Weiner. Abedin was born in Michigan, but was moved to Saudi Arabia at the age of two, where she remained until coming to college in America at George Washington University. Her father, Syed Abedin, was Indian. Her mother, Saliha Abedin, is Pakistani. Huma Abedin has a degree in arts. She's Hillary's closest aide. Both Valerie Jarrett and Huma Abedin have been instrumental in getting their respective bosses, Obama and Clinton, to add more and more Muslims to their administration. Last week, Abedin railed against Donald Trump and proclaimed how proud she was to be a Muslim. Not an American. Not an American Muslim. Just a Muslim. Is it any wonder why our country is under fire from the Islamic world when the two most influential Muslims in government have the ear of the current Democrat president and the unethical woman who wishes to occupy the Oval Office next? Now, it's best to deal with facts and not hope when dealing with the Islamic jihadist threats to America. Since 9/11, over 27,300 acts of violence around the world have been committed in the name of Allah and His Prophet. That Prophet, Muhammad, waged over 60 military campaigns in which looting and murder of his enemies were at the forefront. Enslaving wives and children were commonplace for Muhammad. He even personally oversaw the beheading of several hundred Jewish men and young boys. The Quran, which true Muslims believe is the unalterable final word of Allah, is full of violent passages. At this point, let's clear something up. Critics of Christianity point to the Christian Bible and the Old Testament's words of violence to somehow justify what the Quran teaches. But the difference is that Christians have moved away from those proclamations and into the present century, whereas Islam has remained in the 7th century and refuses to change. As Brad Schaefer pointed out recently, there may be many peace-loving Muslims, but Islam itself is not, by definition, a religion of peace. While Christians have opted to discard the more violent passages of the Bible as primitive, immoral, and mostly figurative, They instead point to the New Testament. Even ardent atheists agree that Jesus Christ was a man of peace. Muhammad, not so much. We've heard very little outcry from so-called Muslim leaders denouncing this latest of a long line of butcheries in the name of Allah. Some say it would be dangerous for them to speak out, but does that not prove the point about religious intolerance? The majority of Muslims are, to this point, peaceful. But there is a dangerously large minority who are not peaceful. They tend to be the young, the future of Islam. As many as 40% of Palestinians believe that suicide bombings is justified. 39% of Afghanis, 29% of Egyptians, and even 26% of the so-called peaceful Bangladeshis. Now that's a lot of support for such a heinous and cowardly crime. After the Charlie Hebdo shootings in Paris, but before this latest atrocity, 27% of Frenchmen between 18 and 24 had a favorable attitude toward the Islamic State. A majority of Muslims in our world favor Sharia law, as a large percentage of Muslims here in America. These are mostly young men, but a surprising number of young women who obviously do not comprehend what Sharia law means for women. Women are to blindly obey their husbands. They're second-class citizens, highly vulnerable to sanctioned sexual abuse and violence. Under Sharia law, women can be beaten and even killed at the whim of her husband. The key to world domination by Islam is to move into and outpopulate each country. Muslims already in Europe are having children at a rate 4 times greater than ethnic Europeans. Many self-loathing Europeans are discovering too late that multiculturalism for Muslim immigrants is a one-way street that demands blind tolerance of host countries to the point of cultural suicide. So-called peaceful Muslims behave when in the minority, for they are adept at playing the bullied victim. Even as they brazenly build the largest mosque in Western Europe in Rome, or a cultural center just 2 blocks from Ground Zero in New York. It is no small matter that the most important Sunni state, Saudi Arabia, is a closed prison of a society in which women have few rights and all other faiths are banned. Saudis will not allow non-believers to come there to stay, and they will not accept Muslim refugees from Syria, even as 100,000 air-conditioned luxury tents there go empty. Neither is it a mere footnote that the most important Shiite state, Iran, is headed by Holocaust-denying fanatics and imams who funnel money and arms to Hezbollah, Hamas, and other terror groups, while they relentlessly pursue nuclear weapons, something that Barack Obama has opened the door for them to accomplish. In the list of human rights abusers for 2012, 10 out of 15 of the worst abusers were predominantly Muslim countries. In short, there is no country on earth where human rights have not been severely curtailed once Islam becomes the dominant force. In 2014, an Open Doors USA study confirmed that of the 50 worst nations for persecution of Christians, a whopping 82% were Muslim-dominated countries. 82%. Who considers that tolerant or peaceful? While some of the older Muslims in America seem to be more inclined to peace, young Muslims in America seem to be more radicalized, more devout, and more hostile to the West than their parents. Of those surveyed among 18 to 29-year-olds, 60% consider themselves Muslims first. Only 35% put America first. 5% were unsure. Even more unsettling, a full 15% consider suicide bombings justified. And 5% are not sure. That 20% slice of American subculture would consider suicide bombings justified, and that's disturbing. We have to wonder what goes on behind the closed doors in our ever more numerous mosques. 50% of Muslim youths attend regularly. Liberals, communists, and socialists, along with Obama, decided that surveillance of mosques and schools where radical Islam is taught should be discontinued. Now, we know that many of these mosques have imams radicalizing Muslims. Hate speech is a common occurrence. And yet, we stopped monitoring them. Now, I go to a Methodist church, and I have no problem whatsoever with security surveillance of my church. If the government has reason to believe that hate and violence are being taught anywhere in America, churches, mosques, under the banner of Black Lives Matter, or the opulent surroundings from which Louis Farrakhan calls for 10,000 black men to come forward, stalk, and kill innocent white people, no one should object. Those who do are the ones guilty of anarchy. But the President of the United States, Barack Obama, sat in the pew of a Chicago church for 20 years where Jeremiah Wright was preaching hate and violence against white people. And yet Obama denied that he had ever heard a discouraging word out of Jeremiah Wright. Lying to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton is part of their nature.
Tom, I've heard a lot of talk radio in the last day or two or three, and I'm always worried around Christmas time, you know how they dump things in, and so I'm kind of concerned they're going to do some things with this TPP and climate change. They're not giving up on that either, but they're coming after, in my opinion, they're coming after the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, the freedom of religion. I'm just scared of this. I fear not, but I'm concerned. I fear not because God tells me to fear not. I'm also concerned about the right to bear arms. I hear that maybe sometime next year that they will come after the arms of the people of America. Don't know. Just hear that. Just passing it along. Also, many things are happening now. There's a new church out there's growing by leaps and bounds. I forgot the name of it. It's tied into Star Wars, and it's called the Jedi Church, I think. And it's nothing but a scam, nothing but a scam. And God says he will not be mocked. And, Tom, we depend on you to research things out for the truth for us. And and I appreciate what you do so much. It's just, I know you love America. You want to keep it free like I do. And they are my opinions. If anybody has a difference with you and me, 99% of what you say, I totally agree with. I probably agree with 100%, but just keep it on a equal basis. I say 99%. But if anyone out there disagrees with you and me, I think this is a great country. We have a right to debate our differences, and I would. But you know, I heard a word, the criminal. Let's see, something I can't even remember now. But a new word that's crept into the lexicon. And anyway, but I know that you're concerned about America like I do, and I appreciate the fact that you stand for liberty and freedom, and it's my pleasure to stand side by side with Tom Jonas. So, Tom, come on back in.
Well, under the guise of cultural outreach, the Saudi government spends billions of dollars each year exporting mosque construction, building religious schools that lean toward the most virulent Islamic practice, Wahhabism, right here in America. They spend billions on literature and prison outreach. Wahhabism is intolerant and militant, and it's endorsed fully by the Saudis, while all other religious expression is banned. Muslims are quick to take offense, but I can care less about hair-trigger sensibilities that stir up anger and even murderous rampages over silly cartoons, but nary a peep over atrocities committed in the name of Allah all over the world every day, from London to Paris to Madrid to Boston and San Bernardino. Part of living in the Western world, where these Muslims chose to live, is accepting that the cherished right to speak freely and believe in whatever God we wish, or none at all for that matter, far outweighs the contrived right to never be offended. Christians and Jews deal with being offended every day. From 9/11 to the latest bloodletting in San Bernardino, far too many have perished at the hands of this religion of peace. I'd rather live in a land of free Islamophobes than politically correct slaves. Australia has had enough. They have ordered all Muslims who want Sharia law to leave Australia immediately. We should have done that years ago. But it's not too late for Obama to use executive authority to issue that order. He will not do it, of course, because of his defense of Islam. In Russia, Putin has done the same thing, warning Muslims that if you want to be here, that's fine. But if you want us to change to the way you want it to be, that's not fine. Go home. Now, I'll readily admit that there are a handful of people who call themselves Christians and plot violence. But the numbers are extremely small, and none of us condone it. Ask yourself why Barack Obama cannot admit that there are a growing number of Islamic extremists that are slaughtering Christians and Jews and other Muslims who will not bow to these fanatics. He is not so much protecting Islam as he is building distrust and the resolve to move against those who threaten our lives every day. As Commander-in-Chief, Obama's primary duty is to protect the American people, not Islam. The argument that when we don't agree with Islamists, it just fuels their hate for us is laughable. The fact is, the United States is less than 300 years old. Militant Islam, with all of its hate and fury, has been in place for thousands of years. Their hate is taught to them every day. Non-believers of Islam have no right to live. Muslims have the right to steal their property. Hate-filled imams publicly call for death to all non-believers right here in our own country. Muslims who choose to live here, they were not brought here against their will after all, arrive and begin to demand that our country change to suit them and their perverted view of Islam. They demand that we live under Sharia law. They demand that they not be offended in any way. The whole idea is absurd. And yet, liberal Americans and their lapdogs in the mainstream media have made their own demands. Radical Muslims must be treated with kindness. We must overlook their demands for our death and give all of them the benefit of the doubt. That ideology has brought us to a breaking point, and we must change direction immediately. Now, in all fairness, we've seen in the last few days a movement begun by Muslims in America called Name and Shame. Whether or not the majority of Muslims here join that movement remains to be seen. But if the divide between Christians, Jews, and Muslims is to be healed, it will require the followers of Islam to stand up against those who claim have kidnapped their religion. Name the radicals. Shame them through recognition. Report them to law enforcement. No one expects a Muslim who claims to be peaceful to fight the war on terrorism by themselves. If Muslims want to be peaceful Americans, don't just talk about it or make excuses for the radicals among you. Stand up. Defend the country that has given you more freedom and opportunity than any other place on earth. Washington politicians have been controlled for decades by money and greed. Lobbyists for major companies and far-left organizations donate huge amounts of money to elected officials. Unions blindly fill their coffers in return for regulations that enrich unions, but stifle the very businesses they need for jobs. Union leaders simply will not see the forest for the trees. The hostility we see from the liberal community towards Donald Trump is a case in point. By financing his own campaign, Trump would owe no debt to those money grubbers who have brought our country to the brink. That terrifies those in power, Democrats and Republicans. Their gravy train senses danger. So whether you agree or disagree with Trump, and I agree and disagree with him depending upon the issue, you must admit that he says what he thinks, not what you want to hear. This election in 2016 will make or break our country. History will reveal that Barack Obama was the greatest fraud ever foisted upon America. The damage he has done, not to mention the damage he intends to inflict upon us in the year he has left, will be difficult, if not impossible, to overcome. In Guantanamo alone, one in three of the prisoners Obama has released have returned to jihadism, including at least three of the five that he traded for an army deserter, Bo Bergdahl. So, what do we do? Do as Russia and Australia have done and expel any Muslim calling for Sharia law in America. Stop all immigration, not just Muslims, for a period of 18 to 24 months or more if needed, to put in place a vetting system that prevents those who mean us harm from coming here. Track down and deport all of those, Muslim or not, that have overstayed their temporary visas. They should never be allowed back into the United States under any circumstance. Cancel the passports of any American who goes overseas to fight with terrorism and reinstate the means to track those who sympathize with jihad here at home, and deport them, never to return. Make it crystal clear that anyone coming to this country to live, or those already here from a foreign land, must adapt to our rules or go back to a place where the rules are more favorable to them. Learn English. Assimilate into our culture. As Teddy Roosevelt put it so many years ago, if you do not want to be Americans, protect and defend us. Why are you here? For far too long, we've allowed the liberals, communists, and socialists among us to brand us as racist, homophobes, Islamophobes, or sexists when we disagree with their position. Technology has changed our country for better and for worse. The future will see more innovation, more change. For instance, FedEx and others are planning to use drones to drop packages at your door. Do you realize how easy it will be to drop a bomb at your door? Drones are flying off the shelves of stores, and most are for recreational purposes. But just like the analogy that I gave you about rabid dogs, it only takes one to end your life. We should move now to require a license for anybody owning a drone. You can't drive a motor vehicle without a license, and the future use of drones offers far more danger. Enforce our laws against hate speech and death threats, regardless of whether they come from a demon like Louis Farrakhan, a deranged Muslim, or a person of any race, creed, or color. Put term limits in place for Congress, just as in the presidency. Anyone who stays there for decades cannot help but become a puppet for special interests. House members should be allowed up to 2 4-year terms. Senators, 2 6-year terms. After that, put their massive ego in the suitcase and let them go home. Curb the ability of a president, any president, to ignore the Constitution and rule as an emperor through the use of executive action. Liberals always demand that a speaker detail what needs to be done, not just complain. I've done that today. It's not a comprehensive list of actions needed, but it's a darn good start. And I hope you agree with me and urge your congresspersons to work for you, not special interests with what amounts to bribes. Now I'll be with you next Monday. I will not be with you for two Mondays following that. Carl, you can run some of my past commentaries if you like, or fill it in a different way. But Ann and I are going to be going to Panama, a place we've never been, and Colombia, where we've never been, and kind of getting back and relaxing and enjoying and letting the voice rest a little bit. And I will return on that second Monday in January, and I'll be ready, loaded for bear. Carl?
Stay tuned. You might hear Tom Joyner anytime, any day on WTSB. And Tom, thank you for your commentary today. And just stand by, everybody. And Tom's going to be leaving shortly, but he'll be here for a few more days. So, Tom.
We'll be on Monday, Carl. And I'm going to try to keep it short enough that we can take maybe a few calls from folks. We're so close to Christmas. We've all got so much to be thankful for. We've always had so much to be thankful for in this country. And it'd be kind of nice to hear some folks, and you and I both, expressing memories of Christmas past and our hope for Christmas in the future.
Well, thank you, Tom. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. And God bless America.